I see.
Yeah, it's the same stuff. So maybe we should continue. I just distributed some questionnaires, so if you like, it would be nice if you could fill them out during the course of today and just leave them here, so I can get some feedback on the tutorial. Okay, so then I will just continue with the second part of the morning session. So yeah, after having introduced UML as a notation, I will now talk a bit about how to use UML, or rather an extension of UML, to develop safety critical systems. And after that, I will say a bit about security, and then tool support and model-based testing in the afternoon. So in safety, I can now only say a bit about some safety-related requirements that one, just as an example, how to use UML to support safety-critical, or the development of safety-critical systems. But I mean, the examples I'm giving here are really a bit more specific. They will refer more specifically to fault tolerance mechanisms, which is a mechanism which is often used in safety critical systems. But of course, it's not it's not all you can say about safety critical systems. But in the context of this tutorial, I can only give this as a sort of example on how to use UML and how to extend UML to support the development of safety critical systems. Because as I said already, there are many more things to say, but this would really be more than we have time today even. So, but nevertheless, firstly, some words about what safety is about in general. So safety critical systems, there you often have different kinds of failure condition categories, and just as an example, the usual way of defining these categories would be the worst category is catastrophic. Then you have a category hazardous, major, minor, and no effect. So this is just to sort of to order the impact of the failure which it may have. And correspondingly, in many standards, you have also different safety levels. And for example, in the this avionics standards, you have the levels A up to E. And this is also something that I'm going to use in the approach to the fault tolerance mechanisms that I will explain in the upcoming slides. And then, of course, you have safety goals. And these are often given as the maximum allowed failure rate. Of course, this is also only one aspect of the issue, but this is also something that I will make use of in the treatment here. And one thing to notice here, interestingly, for when you try to come up with a development method for safety critical systems, is that often you have, or at least in very in systems with a high degree of safety, you have such standards that you can, you see that testing alone is not sufficient to establish that the system is safe with respect to these requirements. And the numbers I refer to are, I think, in the order of the chance of the probability of failure, maybe 10 to the minus 9 or something like that. And if you actually convert this to the amount of time that the system should run until statistically the first failure happens, this would amount to 100,000 years. And of course, if you look at it that way, then it should be apparent that you cannot establish the fact that there's only one failure in that time period by testing, because you would have to test the system for such a long time, which is not practically feasible. And this is, of course, the reason why, already in the past people have considered analyzing specifications and, of course, again, using formal methods. A motivation why, in this context, it makes sense to analyze your specifications or to verify your specifications, to try to establish that at least on the level of the specifications your system is satisfies such high levels of safety. So of course one would like to say then that it is sort of perfectly safe, although this is something you always have to take with a grain of salt, because as I said already, you on the specification level, you only refer to models, and you may miss problems that arise when the thing is actually implemented. But yeah, this is why you might want to use this model-based approach to start with, and not just to rely on coding and testing. So. As I said, in the next couple of slides, I will focus more specifically on fault tolerance mechanism in the context of safety critical systems. And so, firstly, I would like to show how one could establish that in this respect, safety requirements are satisfied by a given UML model, and how to establish that automatically using tool support based on this, this formal semantics for the simplified fragment of UML, which I mentioned already. And to do, in order to be able to do this automatically in a tool supported way, of course, we have to firstly define for example, what kind of failures can happen to start with? Because my tool can only analyze the models with respect to the possible failures that are somehow included in either the model or the tool itself. You know, somehow hard code the tool. And of course, that's also a limitation, because whatever I do not include in either in the model or in the tool using this approach, of course, that the tool is not able to find the kinds of weaknesses. And that is, of course, something which applies to the approach on the whole. But that's something you cannot get around. So there are, in that sense, the approach is not meant to replace the testing of the running program in the actual environment where it should be tested. Of course, that you would still have to do in the end. But again, the motivation is that this way you can already capture a lot of mistakes, which you can this way remove earlier and save development costs. But it does not completely replace the traditional way of developing and testing, but only complements it. But again, of course, you can also use this for to generate test sequences. So firstly, what kind of failures am I considering in the the part of the approach that I will explain on the next couple of slides. I will focus on failures with respect to data, and more specifically, as an example to explain the approach, failures that can happen to data while it is being exchanged over a communication link between different components in the system. And there, well, you have different possibilities. What can happen to the data that is sent between different components? Firstly, the delivery of the data may be delayed. And that way, it can also happen that the data is reordered in its delivery, so that values that are sent last receive first, or are received first, and so on. And then secondly, data may be lost completely, where of course sort of you might say that to lose data is sort of an infinite state, or the infinite state of delaying data, because in practice at some point a very high delay in the message will amount to a loss of the message. So in that sense, the two kinds of failures are somehow related. You always have a bound after which you will just assume that the data is lost. And then thirdly, something which is different from the two kinds, the other two kinds of failures, is the possible corruption of data. And this, of course, you may or may not notice. And in, that the data is actually corrupted. And in order to be able to notice that the data is corrupted, you would probably know that it's possible to use specific codes for your data, and specifically error detecting codes. And in, on the next couple of slides, I will assume that one makes use of this error detecting code in order to be able to see that a piece of data is actually corrupted. So this is sort of what we take for what I will take for granted on the next couple of slides. And then also an assumption I'm going to make here for simplicity is that failures actually occur randomly. And this, you can often make this simplifying assumption. For example, if you consider hardware components which may actually fail randomly, but of course this is not always the case. So failures may be linked causally, so that if one failure happens, the probability that another failure will then also happen is different from if the first failure would not have happened. So this is really, it's really a simplifying assumption, but I make this here for the presentation, because otherwise things get much more complicated. It's still possible to do it without this this simplifying assumption, it would not be useful for the presentation here. And also I will focus on specific examples for failure semantics, and failure semantics meaning a precise definition of what or in which way a certain component or a certain part of the system may actually fail with respect to the safety requirements under consideration. And so one of the two main ones I'm considering here is firstly the so-called crash performance failure semantics, and this means that a component may either crash or may exceed a given time limit, but it is partially correct in the sense that if it does deliver a value, then the value is correct and not corrupted. And secondly, the value failure semantics means that the component may actually also deliver incorrect values. But of course, there are also other examples for failure semantics. But again, I have to restrict the presentation here. So, now focusing on fault tolerance. Fault tolerance on the whole is a mechanism to compensate the fact that, for example, hardware components do fail in practice. Even if they fail with a low probability, you still have to take that into account if you have such high safety requirements as I mentioned earlier, especially considering that a component maybe is iterated frequently and is used over a long period of time. Then even if you have a probability of failure of 10 to the whatever minus 9 or so, then this in the long run may actually have an effect. And this is why in this field, for a long time, people have come up with so-called fault tolerance mechanisms, again to compensate the fact that failures occur and to provide safety guarantees in spite of the failure of underlying components used in the system. And specifically, the goal is that there should be no hazards in the presence of single point failures. And this means that, of course, if you look at a given redundancy model, the main way of providing redundancy and thereby fault tolerance is to replicate components and to, for example, a controller which computes a certain value, to have several copies of the controller and then to vote whichever value should actually be correct. And this would an example for a redundancy model, namely a replication of a certain component and then a certain voting process to establish the result of the joint computation.
So again, you are implicitly talking about hardware components.
About hardware.
Are you talking just about hardware components, or you are taking into account the whole component also for describing the software component?
If I refer to failures, then yeah. So I make certain.
You deal about data, and so in my mind, I am thinking about also the software behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have failure for software behavior. If you take into account software, you cannot deal with the single point failures. So you cannot deal with the redundancy.
Yes, I focus on hardware with respect to the occurrence of failures, and this way I make certain I can make certain simplifying assumptions such as random occurrence of failures. And as you also say, replication.
Random occurrence of failure, that's okay, but you may have a random occurrence of other failure, or you have a random occurrence also of software failures that mm-hmm. comes from design errors.
Yeah, but then the question is whether this is actually, or in what sense this is actually random, because I guess it depends where you consider the randomness.
By discovering any.
Yes. I mean, by random, I mean here that you employ a certain part of the system, for example, the hardware, and it will fail with a certain probability. And this
is well, almost well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And this often applies to hardware components, this situation. If you have software, then, there may be a bug in the software, but it's harder to say to sort of state the probability that there is a bug. I mean, either there is a bug in the software and it will fail, but you don't know it yet, and then it will fail again if you execute the software again, and it will always fail. It's a sort of a 0-1 situation. either it will fail and then it will probably always fail, or it's okay and then it will never fail. Whereas in hardware, it sort of it is statistically distributed. It fails with a certain probability, but most of the time it will work fine. And with software, usually one should assume that the same piece of software executed again.
That is very clear to me.
Mm. Yes.
Starting from that, it means that in the next slide you are referring to hardware components.
Yes, when I refer to the faults that arise, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. That's a good comment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean the software. This is actually true when considering software and how failures arise from software and how to deal with that. That's it's probably more difficult on the whole. Not just thinking about a model-based approach. And I mean, there has been some research trying to sort of take the methods which you can use in the hardware setting where everything is pretty much well behaved in a sense and apply this to software. But as mentioned, in software it's not so easy, for example, to use replication, because the first question would be what replication means there anyway. If you could not just replicate the same software, because presumably it will have the same behavior, even if you let it run in parallel. But whereas in hardware you would say that if one component fails, then hopefully the other will still be fine. Whereas in software you would need something like different versions of the software being programmed, maybe by different people and so on. So there are many questions related to how you could do that.
I was just going to say in software you have to use diversity.
Yes. Yeah.
And you probably don't use that on the whole system. Everyone knows that's too expensive. What you do is to look at certain aspects. For example, if you're in a flight, in an avionics system has an altitude calculation, you can decide this by different techniques,
yes.
At least three different techniques, and you use diversity.
Yes. Yeah. So this, but these questions I don't really focus on in this approach here. And this is really how you deal with the redundancy is in a way orthogonal to how you incorporate this in this software development process. And as I said, for simplicity, I make these assumptions that as in the setting of hardware, you can you can assume that failures occur randomly, and then you could use replication in that situation. More remarks?
Because it is a little bit tricky. Mm-hmm. From the point of view, it states that you have to deal with the diversity with the software. Mm-hmm. You may redound that for fault tolerance of the hardware, so diversity of functional diversity for software, redundancy for hardware. It is not clear at this point why, if you put the previous slide, why you talk of a redundancy model that is typical of the hardware when you are talking essentially in a process model, in a software and in a model that tends to behave to which it is associated to software.
Yes.
So I make a little bit lost.
Okay. The situation here. Yes. The situation here is that I'm talking about software.
You are dealing with an hardware.
Yes. No. I'm talking about software, which of course.
Yes.
Which of course runs on hardware. So and the point is that. But it's a good question.
So this is the model of the underlying the hardware of your software. Mm-hmm. You are saying that.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
It's a good question. So I consider software, of course, using UML, we would like to develop software. And this is, of course, running on hardware. And now I am considering the failures that arise from the hardware level and have
it will stop the
exactly.
All the function of the system.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Yes. So that's the relation here. Mm-hmm.
But in a way, I think you wouldn't need to restrict yourself to hardware carriers. I mean, you could as well if you have the diversity of techniques.
Yeah. Yes.
Also mm-hmm. consider software, which we already do today.
Yes. Yeah, but I mean,
maybe when you continue to look at these. I'm not sure we have to make this restriction.
I'm not sure either, but to be on the safe side, I guess it would. And one thing what I will use in on the next couple of slides is this assumption that the failures are random. And even if you use software diversity, at least you have to do some research to establish still that your failures in software will also be randomly distributed. Okay, people have been doing research, but it's, for me, it's not so immediately clear because it's more difficult to establish. You need probably to develop your different versions of the software. You may even need different people because the same people may make the same mistakes. And I'm not trying to discuss this here, but
Not only that, there are some studies saying by Luke Levison saying
yes.
that there are some coincidence errors.
Yes, but that's why I said what you do today. That's
all
old.
Right, okay.
That's old. That's old.
Okay.
So what was his name?
Mentiless.
Yeah, not only Mentiless, but also this guy.
Okay.
But anyhow, what I wanted to say is that what you do today, if you look at when you talk about fault tolerance, you always have an assumption about what kind of fault is it, because that's the way you have to decide how you will attack this problem, what kind of solution, error correction you will do. And when you look at things that might be hazardous, different types of anomalies, for example, as I said, you look at not the complete system, you look at specific things that might go wrong. For example, the altitude calculation. And then you apply diversity to that.
Right.
You may have a number of those things that are crucial for safety. And then you use diverse techniques to decide what altitude does the plane have right now. You use the software technique, depth reckoning is classical. You can use the broader information, you can use pressure. You have at least three different ways, and then you have the voting mechanism, so you can tolerate one fault out of three. I mean, this is the kind of thing you do. Everyone knows you just don't take different teams trying to build the same system in different ways, different languages, because you have this kind of logical errors that you make. Anyhow, if you use different algorithms, maybe different techniques not on soccer to decide on these things that might go wrong, you are more clever, and that's the way you do. It's more economical. So what I'm saying, if there is anything in your presentation here that resides heavily on random, then of course you are in a problem. But we'll have to see.
Yes. Okay. So we just make this assumption just for the moment. And okay, so in particular, as an example for safety critical systems, one could consider, of course, an embedded software, and this is increasingly used in safety critical systems because of its flexibility, and this is done in different application domains, by now. Almost all of the relevant application domains, including automotive, avionics, aeronautics, robotics, and so on. In our group, we've actually been in contact of some of these application domains. For example, there has been a project for using these model-based development techniques in the context of developing airplane software. And also we are working together with BMW, and recently there specifically there's an emphasis on the X-by-wire issue, such as brake-by-wire, drive, or steer-by-wire, and so on. And there, of course, you use software, and you have all kinds of questions related to that. You may even may want to be able to download software in an existing system, so in actually into the car, and you have all kinds of problems related to that. And they are actually then also related to security, because you want to make sure that there's well, no adversary can make, well, can threaten human lives by introducing faulty code on in car controllers and so on. So this is quite interesting domain where actually the two kinds of well, security and safety requirements are mixed up. And yeah, now I will specifically explain how to use an extension of, or how to extend the UML to be used in the application domain of static critical systems. And the overall goal now is that firstly, so this really applies to not only to safety but also to the security approach, and maybe in general to extending UML for different critical application domains. Firstly, of course, one would be able to evaluate UML specifications for weaknesses in the design with respect to the specific requirements. But on the other hand, so this is the sort of destructive way or approach to the problem. You know, find the bugs in the model and point them out to the user. But there's also a more constructive side of this approach, is to try to use UML as a means to well, to use established safety engineering knowledge in the development context, and specifically to offer this also to developers who may not be specialized in safety critical systems. And so in a sense, you could use UML as a sort of enhanced checklist where while the developer does not himself have to really go through the checklist and see whether the system is constructed according to the checklist, but in a way this is included in the UML specification. And then you can you can analyze this, that automatically using the tool support, which is well, provided for this approach. And again, the goal is to to consider the safety requirements from early on in the system development and also in the system context. And you may also well, have the added benefit that when you use UML and use this model-based approach to develop systems, then you actually have the documentation in a way for free. And this is all. Well, this is often part of the certification or the material that you have to produce if you need certification. And in that sense, you may actually have some well, some added benefit there, and maybe save some of the extra investment which you in the beginning maybe have to put into the approach, because you start by constructing the model rather than just start a program. And again, well, this is now also sort of typical of the approach and also applies to the security situation. The idea is that there are some safety requirements which come up a lot, and which you can specify or define and even formalize with respect to the formal semantics which is defined for this simplified fragment for UML. So firstly you can do this to the main important testing requirements, and secondly also to the failure scenarios which you would like to consider. And these are, for example, those that I explained on the earlier slide, such as, you know, losing or delaying messages and so on. And because these recur a lot, and because you can specify them with respect to this underlying formal semantics, you can then from that extract a constraint which you can then associate with a stereotype. And so the user of this approach just has to know the name of the stereotype and has to have a certain intuitive knowledge about what the stereotype is supposed to mean, and then you can attach the stereotype to the model element and then use the tool support to analyze automatically whether the safety requirement associated with the stereotype is fulfilled by the model. And so the precise definition of this requirement somehow is hidden under the surface of this approach. And this is, again, as I said earlier, one of the motivations to try to make this formal stuff available to people who don't actually have themselves have a deep training in formal methods or logic or mathematics or so. But of course, again, this is only possible because there are some main and some important safety requirements and failure scenarios which you can formalize once and for all. Of course, in principle, you could then also extend the UMA extension yourself, but for that you would actually have to need to know things about UMA semantics, about how to specify these things formally, and so on. So there's a sort of there are two levels to the approach: one for the just the plain user in a way, and one for the advanced user who's actually able to extend the approach himself. Yes, and again, as with the other application domains, you firstly would like to make sure that the UML model provides the requirements that are formulated or that are included in the UML model by the stereotypes. And secondly, you want to make sure that then in the end, of course, the implemented code provides these requirements. And if, as at present, you will probably still have to construct the code manually, this means that you will probably want to do this by generating test sequences from the UML model. So now a bit more about the underlying model or the underlying mathematics in a way, specifically for this safety approach. So as I said, here in the presentation I focus on fault tolerance and the related issues. So firstly, we have to consider how the failures are modeled exactly within the model of the formal semantics of the UMA fragment. So suppose that we are given some kind of redundancy model R, where R here is really just a symbol, and firstly, the symbol has its meaning by this defined by this failure set, which I will now explain. So initially it's just a symbol. It could be crash performance, or it could be value, or redundancy model could be, let's say, a replication of three copies with majority vote or something like that. But initially, as I said, it's just the name, and then we're also given a stereotype representing the failure semantics, and here I just had the two examples, crash performance and values. Then the resulting failure set for the given redundancy model and for the given failure semantics consists of a set of possible failures with associated arguments. And this now refers to what I said earlier, what the failures are that I'm considering here in this context. Firstly, as I said, messages can be delayed, lost, or corrupted. And now, of course, in this, if we consider a specific redundancy model and a specific failure semantics, we need to consider more specifically what the probabilities are and what the time limits are that these failures happen. In a way, we are given for the given redundancy model and for the failure semantics, we're given a value, maybe a time value for the expected maximum time delay under a given redundancy model and with respect to a given failure semantics. And similarly, also we're given a probability that a certain value is not delivered within the time limit, and a probability that the value which is delivered on time is actually corrupted. And again, in each case, this is including the redundancy model already. But you can also define this freely using another stereotype, the risk stereotype, with the associated tags.
Mm-hmm. Would you accept the negative time delay, the case that something comes too early, which also is
That's a good question. I have not actually considered an example in that direction, but yes, I'm just trying to think whether this could be. I think this should work also. I think you wouldn't have to do too many adjustments, but I have not actually tried out an example in that direction, but that's a good suggestion.
Excuse me, but when you talk about probability that the value is not delivered in time, or is not delivered in value. How you introduce probability in your model as distribution and the distribution function as the numbers and and how you can affect to have this type of value behavior.
I think this about what kind of probability I'm assuming here, I will say on a later slide.
That regulates this failure behavior of the system. How you extract and from where you extract?
Yes. This is this information would sort of have to be input into the methodology. So you would need to know, for example, if you consider hardware, you would need to know the probability that let's say that a value is lost, and this is of course something which again is sort of orthogonal to
you have the failure data of a hardware component, but it is more difficult to have as an input for your model this type of data, as far as I know, because it is a limited view of the state of the art, of course.
I think, you could expect that for the hardware you have these kind of values. I think this is also what you said.
You have the failure behavior of a component.
Yes.
That is not the same stuff than me. Because you are saying what is the probability that that function cannot act as I expect and it fails in value. That's another stuff.
Okay, you mean as opposed
to... It is another stuff starting from the failure behavior of the component. And it's also another stuff that you have a timeout of the system respect to the failure behavior of the hardware component. And there is a bridge to be covered from this input data of the behavior of other components and this type of of input data. So the, my question is, how you expect to cover the bridge in the sense, does the methodology helps you in covering this bridge by model and by analyzing some stuff or not?
Yeah, so the this data you would have to extract from the hardware component by testing. So you would have to test firstly the component sufficiently well to extract the probability that while it extends a certain time bound in its producing the value, or that there's no answer at all, or that the wrong values
But this testing do not is sufficient to test the hardware component, but it is for having this value you have to have you must have the hardware component plus the software function. So for having these values you have already to have the system built by hardware and software and plus built. But this is not helpful for design, for assisting in design if my point of view is correct. If it is wrong, please correct me.
So the point of view that I'm taking here implicitly is that you can modularize the testing of a hardware component from the software context in which the hardware component will be used. So the assumption is that you can actually test the hardware for things such as how much time it takes for a controller to produce a certain value, how large the probability is that the value is lost during transmission, or that the probability that the value is corrupted during transmission. And this here, the assumption is that these values you can establish by testing the hardware components independently of the software that you would like to build on the hardware level.
That's okay, but you do not have these values.
Well, if you do the testing of the hardware components, then you do the testing in order to establish the values.
Or you get
okay,
from
I will stop here.
From the producer, you get entity
hopefully.
Values from
hopefully, yes.
From
I mean
memory that, components.
Yes, and that would of course be even better. Yeah. Okay, so this is the assumption that I'm doing here, that one can modularize the thing, so that it's you can also you can do the testing of these values independently of what the software will actually then do exactly when you let it run on it. This is it's an assumption, but I think it's an assumption you almost have to make, because otherwise the complexity of the whole thing becomes just even larger than already. If you want to assume that, of course it is possible that for certain for certain software running on the hardware the hardware suddenly doesn't work anymore, but for other software it does work. This is of course possible, but that's bad luck then. I suppose in this approach, because otherwise it would mean that you would need to analyze the complete system, including the hardware, and with respect to probability distributions, and that probably will be infeasible, because if you want to analyze something for probability distributions, then that in itself is it's technically demanding, even if you just try to extract the probability values from a hardware component. That's difficult in itself, and that's why I'm making this assumption that you can modularize this here. An example to explain this, the previous slide, so assuming that we have this redundancy model R, which we intend to be a controller with redundancy 3, and in this case the fastest result, then the values that would be used here as the arguments of the three elements in this failure set would be, T would be firstly the delay of the fastest controller, because that's the result that is going to be taken by this voting process. Then secondly, P is the probability that this even the fastest result is not delivered within the time bound T, and Q is the probability that this fastest result is then corrupted. So in each case, these values, and again they include the redundancy mechanism. And so this is sort of the way that you you define your redundancy model R by referring firstly to a certain failure semantics, and secondly then by defining these failure sets. And as I said earlier, this will then refer to specific data on the hardware components used in the system, which you somehow have to establish. Okay, then the first stereotype. Firstly, so this is the guarantee stereotype, and you can use this to label communication dependencies and system components in the deployment diagram. So firstly, and in addition to that, you have you can associate goals using this tag, where the goal has as a value a set of consisting of some of these three elements, where again